everybody, it's episode 223 of PodQuest.
Hello. Yeah.
It's Wednesday, December 4th, 2018. I am Chris. With me is Walnut.
Yeah, I'm right here.
And Druton.
Hey.
And we're back from PAX Unplugged, everybody.
Yeah, we're back.
It's also Tuesday.
What did I say?
Wednesday.
Fuck, it is Tuesday, isn't it? Is it the 4th, though?
Yeah.
It is the 4th. So I wasn't all the way off.
I guess we gotta restart it all. Let's go.
No.
Nah, it's fine. Like, Tuesday, Wednesday, who really cares?
I mean,
you're probably listening to this on Wednesday.
Yeah, so the episode's gonna post on a Wednesday. It's close enough.
Yeah.
You know what? If you want to keep it, you can keep it. That's up to you.
I'm going to.
Fine.
But
who's
yeah,
gonna edit you out of the whole show, though?
Oh, he always does, I'm sure.
If I actually had individual tracks for everybody, I would fucking turn his off all the time. I'd put weird little effects on it to make him sound funny.
Yeah.
I'd have a lot of fun with your track.
I mean, yeah, because I'm the only other one that talks in this podcast. Oh! Slam.
I mean, he has a point.
I mean, I guess.
At a certain point, you just fucking zone out, and it's usually when television comes up.
Yep. Because television is bad.
Says the guy who watches 12 different wrestling shows every week.
Barely anymore.
Oh, have you cut a lot of them out?
I literally barely watch anything on TV anymore.
What do you do with your day?
Nothing. I don't do anything.
That's not good either.
Eh.
Read a book, you...
Eh.
Books are good for you. They're full of words. They help better you in some way or another.
I guess.
So, what do we got for this week?
Well, we're gonna swap things up a little bit. And we're going to start by talking about PAX Unplugged.
Yeah, sounds
yeah,
right.
It was the second year.
That it was.
Much bigger this year than it was last year. Like,
so not just bigger, but they did a better job of laying out the floor.
Yeah.
Which a lot of that probably has to do with the fact they had the whole convention center to work with rather than only the upstairs.
Yeah, because I think the downstairs last year was some sort of...
It was the marathon.
Yeah, the marathon was happening. Yep.
I think it was marathon registration or some other. excuse me. It wasn't the Philly marathon because
no, it was.
When I went in for my friend's bachelor party in June, that was the Philly marathon.
No.
There are two different
marathons. Or maybe it was the Broad Street
run. That was the Broad Street run. Broad Street runs in the summer.
The Philly marathon actually just happened 2 weeks ago. It was the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Saturday is the half marathon and Sunday is the full marathon. It was the day that you guys went to the Vogels for the thing, and I had to work.
Yeah, sure, work.
Yeah, no, I was in Ben Salem, miserable all day. The guy that I work with could not get out of Philadelphia. He lives like right near like 12th and Broad, and he was able to get out of the parking lot in his building, but literally that entire area of the city was like self-contained. You could not get in or out of any spot.
I think their thing started at, what, 3? I left at maybe quarter after 3. I didn't get there till 6.
4?
Was it 4 when it started?
I don't know.
I can't remember, but I left like maybe like 15 minutes either before or after it was supposed to start, just so I could be fashionably late, you know. And it took me about 2 hours to get there.
Yeah, no, that's the average. I have clients that are out that way. That's average. It's an hour and a half, 2 hours to get out there.
My phone said only an hour.
Yeah, no, that's a lie. Like, so 76 is such a shit show.
Yeah.
That even when there's no traffic, you get onto it and there's suddenly magically traffic.
Yeah.
Yep.
That
had I known it was going to be that bad, I would have just taken 476, the blue
route. That's usually better, but it's like 15 extra miles, if not a little bit more, maybe 20 extra miles.
But it's generally less time.
Oh, no, it is. That's usually when I go to work out there, I will go down 95, get on 476, and get to someplace about a half hour sooner than I normally would, which is absurd.
But I'm sure this conversation is so titillating, they really want to hear about PAX.
Yeah. PAX Unplugged Year 2, all tabletop gaming. Like we were saying, it's last year they had one big expo hall,
yeah,
and then some of the smaller rooms for panels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, though, the one big expo hall they had split, where it was... The exhibitors showing off their games,
mm-hmm.
The free play area where you could go over and rent games, and they had different companies had demo stations set up.
Yeah.
And then tournaments and the main stage all in one hall.
Yeah.
And
granted, the Philly Convention Center main hall there is pretty large, but
yeah,
when it's sectioned up like that, it gets eaten real quick.
Yeah, so last year, like, there were less vendors. It was very hard to find a place to sit down to play a game from the library just because there were so many people vying for limited table space. This year, they were able to actually move the tournaments downstairs to one of the other large expo halls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were able to put all of the panels, including the main stage, elsewhere. So the main stage was actually in the main theater.
I believe, was it, it was upstairs, right?
Yeah.
It was in... Yeah, I didn't go into it, but I did see the signs.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't use those two rooms last year.
I don't know. It could have been a money thing, a contract thing.
I honestly think they might not have known how big it was going to be and how many people were going to go.
But that still doesn't... The number of people doesn't affect, like, what rooms they use.
Well, so, I mean, like, it affects how much space they rent out.
So, and also, to be fair, have you ever been in the main theater at the Expo Center?
Yeah.
It's huge. It is the size of a theater. And that requires, like, a full staff for audio video. Whereas most of the other rooms don't require an active staff. They have, like, one guy at, like, the sound booth, and that's it. Because everything else is just plug a laptop in and it's on the screen. Usually they actually have, like, a production booth with, like, three or four guys, like, one of them doing sound, one of them doing lighting, like.
Yeah.
So, like, they had less need of actual convention center staff that way. Not much, but I'm sure it helped.
Yeah.
The first year, anyway. This year, it's like, well, no, like, we had thousands and thousands of people. Let's do this right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, still very busy. Saturday had definitely had more people than the year before.
Yeah.
Did either of you hear any numbers from anybody about attendance?
No. I didn't look into it.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything, like, official online from PAX or ReadPop, so I don't know if they've just not released those numbers yet. But it was definitely a lot more people than the previous year.
Yeah.
Less than, like, what I would normally see at, like, a New York Comic Con, but that thing's been going on for over a decade and draws in over 100,000 people.
And New York Comic Con is a much broader spectrum of fandom, whereas this is... Not saying board games are bad, but this is, like...
Sounds like you just said board games are bad.
No, this is more of a niche cliche, or not cliche, but more of a niche spectrum of fandom. So, for a board game convention, it did fantastic, I'm sure. But if you compare it to something like a Comic-Con, maybe that's a little stretching it right there. That's like apples and oranges.
But I'm just saying, that is the next biggest convention I know of in the area.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not going to compare it to Wizard World or Keystone, which suck.
Yeah, well...
So, Keystone had 12 people go to it.
That's a lot of people.
It's not.
That's like, half my Twitter follower. No, I have, like, 150 Twitter followers.
Literally, 12 is not enough to keep a college course open half the time.
No, it's not.
Like, 12 students, and they cancel the class.
Yeah, I think you need 15.
But yeah, there were a lot of games. Some of them were games we had seen last year. Some of them were games that have been out for a long time.
Yeah.
But plenty of them were, like... newer games that, like, I at least have never seen before.
Yeah, and, I mean, I saw a handful of games that I'd never seen before. Like, I tried two of them. I talked to somebody about a third one. Even my old manager from the last place I worked, he told me that he's gotten so into game development that he quit his full-time jobs and he's just making games.
Oh,
and he
cool.
had a booth there. I was like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Good for him.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of his stuff, but I have one of it. I have two of his games upstairs that I bought from him once. But yeah, games are getting huge, and this convention, I'm sure, really helps with spreading the word of some of these things.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it opens up a lot of people's eyes too, that maybe they're familiar with the more traditional games, and I'm not talking traditional like Monopoly and Sorry and I don't know, Scrabble, but like Catan and Ticket to Ride and like the stuff that like it's a little more complicated but you still find it in Walmart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like they walk in here and they're like, oh, there are literally thousands of games that are similar to this, different than this, games about playing hockey and baseball and pinball machines.
Yes. Yeah, there was a Wacky Racers game.
Yeah. There's all sorts of licensed, like there was a last year there was that Super Hot Card game.
Yeah.
This year they had a Metal Gear Solid board game that we saw the banner for.
I saw the banner, and they were the same people who had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game.
Yeah.
But they never had Metal Gear set up.
Okay. Did they have the Ninja Turtles game set up?
They didn't at their booth, but they did at one of the tables.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
And I went to this. According to Eric, this table was so hot all weekend. I went to go talk to the guys and try to learn about it. But there were two guys manning the table. One guy was showing a couple of people how to play. They were midway into teaching, so I was like, I'm not going to cut into them. The other guy was talking to these two people so enthusiastically that it's like, it was hard for me to like cut in. I ended up sitting there for 20 minutes, or I was like, I can't sit here anymore. I only have till 6 o'clock, and I only have a one-day ticket. I need to go do other stuff.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah, I wanted to play it. I fucking love the Turtles, but I just didn't get a chance to. Figures looked really neat, though.
Yeah, I saw the game, and I believe that was when I picked up, and it looks like it's based around the current IDW series.
Yeah.
At least as far as, like, artwork and stuff goes, which is cool, because those at least look like the Turtles, mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, what Nickelodeon's doing with them now.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk about the stuff that you played?
I didn't demo, but I talked to a guy for the Codenames Harry Potter edition.
We actually played that.
We were going to play it, but two of the people I were with were just so confused at the idea that you split the card and you're working all together, but they were confused about how the card placement is with the red cards. Even though it made complete sense to us, they were like, but we're going to get confused. And we're like, well,
then do you want to say who it was?
I'm not going to say who it was. I mean, they don't listen anyway, but still.
Yeah.
They were like, we literally stood there for like 10 minutes arguing the rules that were explained to us. There were people behind us who wanted to see the game and play it. And I'm like, I'm walking away because we're not going to play this. It made sense. I get what their, miscommunication to them was, I guess, but they were overthinking it. But it seems a little too, like, Codenames is a fun game.
Have you ever played any of them?
I have played Disney and original Codenames.
Okay.
And for anybody who's listening who hasn't played it, you are one person is your handler, and you're a spy trying to pick out the people that have information on you. And so the handler, every round can say a number and a word. So the number correlates to how many, informants correlate to this word, and the word is just something that isn't the words that are on the cards or isn't what is on the cards, but it's something that's related to the card. So if the card is teal and there's only one of them, you would say one teal. Something like that.
Yeah, I can actually give an example because I remember it from when we played. Two of the cards we had, it was Voldemort actually like doing some sort of attack with his wand.
Yeah.
And Neville holding the sword of Gryffindor.
Okay.
And it was my turn to give like an example. And I was playing with Erica, and I said, weapon 2.
Okay.
And she got one of them. She did not get the other one, because there were two other pictures with wands in it. But
yeah.
They weren't using them for attacks at the time. Like, one of them just, literally, they were just holding a wand, like, off to, like, the side.
Yeah.
And the other was, like, a close-up of them with, like, the doing the, like, the flashlight. Lumos. Yeah.
And you can even, go as far as to say, like, one of the cards is, David Tennant. So my immediate clue with David Tennant would be Doctor. So I would be like, one, Doctor, and if they saw David Tennant, oh, he was Doctor Who, that would be it. Stuff like that. With Codenames Harry Potter, in original Codenames and all others, you're working against the other team. In Codenames Harry Potter, it's a cooperative game that you're trying to pick out all of the informants. However, like, they're using different sides of the card, so there are a lot of extra informants, but you're using the same color token to place each informant.
Yeah, it was basically like each of you has a slightly different variation of the board on your like card.
Yeah.
And I think the guy said altogether there are 15 informant spots, so yeah. 15 red spots.
Yeah.
And then I think altogether there were 3 of the black spots with the white stars that
on both sides.
Yeah, that were basically your instant loss.
Yeah.
Like,
and this is where it can get a little confusing, because on one side you might have a red spot, but on the other side that same spot might be a black spot. So you have to realize, like, all right, if person A is giving the clue to person B, and they pick the black spot from person C's clues, it's not bad. It's just, which is now, it's why I understand their confusion, because it did seem to make it a little bit more overly complicated, but at the same time, it was pretty simple. It was just...
Yeah, we got a very, very quick explanation.
Yeah.
And then just kind of got left to our own devices.
That was how it was for us as well. Like, I wanted to look at the guy when he came, I was like, we got this, and just start playing, because I've played Codenames.
Neither Eric and I had not. We knew nothing about it.
I've played it a handful of times.
You never played it, right?
No.
It's actually kind of cool if, as long as everyone, like Richie is saying, can, like, wrap their head around the concept, and also the one thing that we ran into at the very beginning was kind of orientation of, mm-hmm. like, the clue card.
Yeah.
Because, like, depending on how you're playing, like, you can't both be standing next to each other because you can't see the other person's side of their card.
Right.
Because it's just one card with, like, an image on both sides.
I mean, so if you are, like, if you and Erica are giving the clues, you can see each other's cards. That's fine.
But we're literally giving the clues to each other.
Well, and that's the thing. When you play, you're supposed to be playing
duos with
multiple other people, and you're supposed to be giving clues to somebody else.
Yeah, this was a situation where...
Yeah.
And, like, the guy even came up, he's like, so, like, you can play this two-player or, like, four-player, like, cooperative, where you guys can either give the clues to each other, and the idea would be you both have to clear your entire board without hitting any of the black spots.
Yeah.
To win. Otherwise, like, the game wins.
And see, since you've never played original Codenames, it is not a cooperative game for four players. It is two teams. One team is blue, one team is red. And this is why there was the confusion, because, but what if I pick something that's not mine? Well, then it's not yours, and you just go off your card. That's where the confusion, like, we were thinking about the original Codename rules and not these new rules.
Oh, yeah, because they did. They only, so Drew, just so you get it, they only had two types of marker. It was a red marker if you got it right, or, like, this little white kind of token if it was a if it was not who you meant it to be, but it was also not a bad spot.
Okay.
Because the bad spot just ended the game immediately.
Right.
So it was basically like, okay, if it's right for either person, put a red token over the card. If it's just like a blank spot, put a white token. Otherwise, game over.
And there's also, it also brings a confusion because some of Kyle's white spots might be different than some of Erica's white spots.
Yeah, because her white spot could be a red spot for me or vice versa. So,
like I said, I understand the confusion. They made it a little bit slightly overly complicated. They could have just had it all on one side. But it happens.
So, as someone who hasn't played it, where I'm confused in just having heard you guys talk about it, what the fuck is the actual goal, the end goal?
So, to uncover all the red spots.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you're playing the way, like, the game was originally designed, which was 2v2, it's basically uncover all the red spots before the other team does.
Well,
or at least uncover more than the other team can.
Well, yeah, so in the original game, it's red versus blue. Whichever team goes first has an extra one, and because they get the extra turn, your objective is to uncover all of your informants before the other team. In this one, it's just uncover all the informants before you run out of beige tokens or before you hit a Death Eater.
Okay.
And yeah, as soon as you hit the Death Eater, it's just game over.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful, like, and it's just a bunch of character cards that you put in, like, a grid. I think it's like a 5x5 grid.
Something like that, yeah.
And then you literally get, like, just a regular little playing card that has two different images on each side of two different grids. And each grid has a different combination of red spaces, white spaces, and black spaces.
Okay.
And they correlate to your grid of cards that's on the table. And white spaces are just benign. Like, if somebody guesses one of them, it's no harm as long as you have white tokens left.
Okay.
Also, when I was mentioning before, the handlers who give you a number and a word, say they tell you two and whatever a word, you can guess up to three times. You can guess one more than the amount of times of the number they sell you, but if you hit a white spot, you're done.
Okay. Like, so, like, I had given that clue before of weapon two.
Right.
Meaning I was aiming for two specific spots mm-hmm. that had weapons in them.
Right.
So, Erica got the sword one right, so I put a red marker down. And then my other spot was the Voldemort spot that I was aiming for. She did not pick that one. She just picked another one with wands in it.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, she was thinking that a wand is a weapon.
Right, right, right.
Had that also been a red spot for me, even though it was not one of the two, I would still put a red token down and she would get to guess one more time. The only downside there is you're not supposed to tell them if they got right what you said. It's weird.
It makes a lot of sense when you play it. Explaining it is kind of hard without having the board in front of you. But it's a fun game, and Codenames is a really neat game. I've gotten into some arguments with it just because of, we played the Disney Codenames, and in the Disney Codenames, even though Piglet's shirt is pink, in the card itself, based on, the shadows of the scene, his shirt looks orange. So they said pink whatever, and I didn't pick Piglet because it's an orange. Even though it's pink in real life, right now, because I don't remember what color Piglet's shirt is.
Just pink because he's a pig?
Piglet's all pink. His shirt is pink and white. He has a pink and white striped shirt. So they were saying, or maybe they said orange, and I saw Piglet, and I pushed Piglet instead of somebody else, and they got mad at me for it. I'm like, it's orange, though. I don't care what it really is. This image, it is orange. So, it could cause some arguments, but that was just more me being fun as well. Codenames is a super fun game, and now there's a Harry Potter version of it.
But what else did you end up playing?
I played, I demoed the Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid, which I don't know who made it or developed it, but it's a neat game. I wouldn't say, I would need to play it more to say whether or not it's awesome, but it's a low deck count card game with figures that you have to move around. You have to protect Angel Grove, and you get a few rounds of fighting just putties, and then once the putties are fended off, the big bad comes out, which the guy was telling us that at one of the other conventions, not this one, somebody ended up walking away with Goldar, so they just don't have a Goldar figure right now.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. But it's Skeleton Guy,
Rita Repulsa?
No, it was a different skeleton. There was a skeleton guy before Rito. This is before Zed. Just Rita. I really think his name is just Skeleton Guy or something like that. He has a big top hat on.
Is he just generic Power Ranger monster basically?
He is a monster from the show.
That's what though, but he wasn't
Yeah.
He wasn't a long-standing antagonist.
Yeah. So it's Goldar, the skeleton guy, a knight guy, and Rita are the four that they have initially. I believe I remember him saying eye guy as well, but I can't remember. And the objective is you all start in the command center, and you draw cards to place putties, and then you have to, there is no turn order. There's just an action counts. So moving to a new area, which you teleport to, is one action, and initiating combat is another action. While in combat, you can react any way you want. So if there's two people in combat, but only one person has cards to fight, that person fights every round and plays the cards they can play. If there's four people in combat and they can each do different things, they can each do different things. You have to be in the same zone to fight with somebody else, and if, say, me and you are playing Cobb and we're both in Ernie's Juice Bar and I initiate combat, you still get the action to move somewhere else or to initiate another combat round.
Okay.
After it all goes through. Everybody gets two actions. That's how it goes. At the end of that, the round is over, and then you go to the next round where you send out more putties. The version they had us play was a very quick bare bones bare bones. They start you out with each play, you get two random Zords. And for every, I believe, five or six putties you kill, you get another Zord. And if you get all six, because you have to get the Megazord as well, you have the Megazord, and each Zord has a different ability. So the Tyrannosaurus adds two damage die to any Ranger's attack. The Triceratops, I believe, lets you take two cards from your discard pile and put it back in your deck. Which your deck is maybe 10 cards. That is also your health. So if you take a hit from something and you declare that you'll take that hit, you draw a card, there's a shield at the bottom. Depending on how many shields, you have to keep drawing until you have more shields than the damage dealt. Once you get more shields, you have to get rid of the cards in the order that you drew them up until you have the extra shield. So say they deal 2 damage, the first card you draw has 1 shield, the next card has 2. You discard the one that has the 1, and then you shuffle in the one that has the 2 back, because you still had additional shield left. Once your deck gets to 0, you automatically teleport to the command center, and you're out for that round.
Okay.
And you lose one of the power crystals that are in the command center, which once you go to 0 power crystals, you lose. Game over. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I don't know if it's something that I want right away. It might have been more fun if I were playing with people I knew, but I just ended up like walking over and they were just getting ready. And I was like, you guys mind if I join? And they brought me in and I was like, all right, there's some strategy here. And it was fun, but maybe if they incorporate the green and or white ranger, that would be, I would be more.
Well, they can't incorporate their white ranger until Zed's involved.
I know. So I'm looking at the Kickstarter and yeah, they're totally going to do the white ranger and Zed. If you pledged like $200-something.
Oh, Jesus.
It might be an expansion stretch goal as well.
I believe it is. So, although like, I think they hit all those. The base game is $75.
Yeah.
Probably because of the miniatures.
And the miniatures were pretty decent size and fairly detailed. Like, they were nice miniatures.
Colored and everything, or were they just like a generic, like...
They were generic gray miniatures. I believe.
I mean, I don't know what they are taking around. The ones you'll get, the Rangers are a solid color to match the Ranger, but then all the rest of them are just gray.
Okay.
Yeah. And, like, the putties weren't even, like, the putties were essentially just little cubes. They weren't even figures. They were just little wooden cubes.
Oh, so, yeah, the putties that you'll get are actually...
They look like putties?
Yeah. They're, okay.
Yeah, so that's probably just their prototype.
Yeah. I want to see more about it before I say I'm definitely going to get it.
That's fair.
It was, for a $75 pricing point, I probably would never get it then.
The base game has...
Just get Eric to buy it.
Madam Woe, Pudgy Pig, Bones is the skeleton guy you were talking about.
Bones.
Nasty Knight, and then also Rita.
And Goldar should be in there as well, right?
Nope.
No?
Not base game.
Okay.
He's the $90 level.
Okay. Nasty Knight is the one that we played against.
Then there's a $150 level that has Evil Green Ranger and the White Ranger and Zed.
Okay.
And then there's a $240 level where you get fucking everything.
That is too many dollars. I like the Power Rangers as much as the next guy, but that is too many fucking dollars.
After Power Rangers, I went looking around. I wanted to buy a game that I played last year called Bargain Quest. I talked about it last year.
We saw it.
They had a booth for it. They weren't selling it. I had a day and a half to buy on their second printing Kickstarter, which ended last night, and I never bought it. Or ended, today's Tuesday, ended Sunday night, and I completely forgot to even buy into
sucks.
It. And so, like, $35, I would have gotten, like, everything with the initial expansion. Now I have to do it at the regular price and not the Kickstarter price, so I have to look into that. But Bargain Quest, stupid fun game, I enjoy it.
Because that was the be a vendor game, right?
Yeah, you're a vendor, and your objective is to make the most gold without the heroes dying, because if the heroes die, then your city gets attacked. And it's fun, I like the concept of it.
I remember you playing it last year.
Yeah. That is also by Renegade.
Oh, okay.
And then technically the first, but the last game that I have to talk about, besides the game we all played together, the last game I have to talk about is Boss Monster 3, which I believe there's like Boss Monster 1, 2, and 3. It's, I think per box is no more than $20, and you can play with them all combined into one.
That sounds right.
And it is essentially you are the boss of a dungeon, and your objective is to kill as many heroes coming to kill you as possible. And so per hero you kill, you collect their soul, and the first person at 10 souls wins. And so the round starts, you have your boss, you build a room, the heroes come and attack you, and you have to build just the dungeon that they're going through. Which I was like, this is actually really fun. Like, trying to, like, there's not a lot of resource management required. It's essentially just placing cards down. And there's some cards, it's like, if you destroy these cards, you get coins, which you can use the coins to do special abilities and other certain ones. So my first card I played down was a room that had a swinging, like a swinging axe.
Okay.
From the ceiling, and if something got to that room and had 3 health or less, I could pay a coin and kill it immediately. So the first hero that came to my room does damage, so it did 2 damage, and he went from 5 to 3. I paid a coin, and I got hit the kill. The heroes will come at you every round, and based on the cards that you have in your rooms, is where they're going to go. So some rooms have books, some rooms have swords, holy symbols, and then money. It's what the hero is looking for, what treasure or whatever. And it is possibility that heroes will start to stack up, because if there's a tie, they're staying in the main town. And they can keep stacking up all the way to 15, as many that come. And once somebody breaks that tie, they're all going to that one room. Somebody could win in essentially 2 rounds if they add up that quickly. We had a guy the guy I was playing with, his room had all of the holy symbols. But there, we were tied for a little bit. He eventually put one down and got like 3 regulars and then an epic hero, which is worth 2 souls, to go to his room. And I'm looking, and this is before we played that social game. And I'm like, I'm counting. I'm like, you have 9 souls. I'm not even going to bother stopping you because I only have 4 and she has 3. So you can just win the game. Plus I have somewhere to be in like 10 minutes. He's like, makes sense. And I let him win.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I added all 3 versions to my Amazon wish list, because they're fairly inexpensive games and they're really easy to pick up. There's not a lot going on at one time to where like even the worst board gamers can figure it out.
Okay.
I don't think I really played much of anything else. Just ended up walking around and checking the expo hall out. I was only there for, like I said, like 6 hours.
Yeah. And I mean, like, a lot of these games, like, by the time you get down and actually play them, like, they can take an hour.
Yeah, I believe Boss Monster took about 30 minutes, 45 minutes. Power Rangers, because we were new and learning, even though we only did 2 rounds, it took, like, an hour to play and figure out.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it took a while to learn some of these games. Or, not to learn, but to play some of these.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, before we move on to like the other stuff, let's talk about that social deduction game.
Yeah.
So it was called Blood on the Clock Tower.
Okay.
It's not out yet.
No.
It's not even on Kickstarter yet.
No, yeah. They're kickstarting it early next year.
Yes.
But the company whose name I do not know.
All right, I'm gonna have to look it up.
Yeah. They're based out of Australia.
Yeah.
But they were running three games at a time. Every hour on the hour, all weekend. And after, so they were on the, like, the social game free play area of the floor. So their area actually stayed open late. Like, the expo side of everything closed at 6, but the other side was available until, I think, 11.
Yeah.
So the way that they were doing it was during regular expo hours, so 10 to 6-ish. They were running kind of the base game, which is what we played.
Yeah.
And actually Drew and I, along with Sarah and Erica, played twice. We played once on Friday with 5 random strangers, and then we played again on Saturday with the 3 of us plus the girls and Eric and Audra and Jensen.
Yeah. Just everybody that everybody that we were there with.
So like we actually had like a they were doing 9-person demos. The game can play up to 20.
Yeah.
And we had a full team. We had a full group of 9 people that were all just people we knew.
Yeah,
which definitely made it. It made it a little more interesting than the round we had played the day before, where we didn't know 5 of the people. So it took a couple of rounds of people getting executed before everyone kind of like started openly talking and accusing each other.
Yeah.
Whereas with our game, it's just like, no, fuck you, Rich. You're the demon.
I was not the demon the entire time. Friggin', I was the drunkard, and Druton broke my abilities, and it was just so mean that, like...
Well, I think, weren't you drunk and poisoned?
I was drunk and poisoned.
So,
you were going to be the most ineffective that character could possibly have been.
I mean, I was only poisoned for the 1 round.
But you were the drunk, so you would have actually...
There's a chance my powers don't work. So, occasionally the powers do actually work. But, since I already lied and said that Druton was the virgin, like... I was like, I don't know what to do now, because, like,
yeah.
I'm drunk.
So I guess it would behoove us to actually explain what this game is.
No, no, I just want people thinking Jurton's a virgin.
So the idea is it's a social deduction game, similar to like Resistance and Avalon and Secret Hitler, in the fact that a player or more than one player is on the side of evil, and other players are on the side of good, and sort of the whole concept is to try and deduce who is evil and murder them before all of the good people are murdered.
Because, yeah, the main evil person is murdering a townsperson every night.
Yeah, so it's a day-night cycle, and everybody has a role. Where a lot of those social deduction games, you maybe have, like, three people have some sort of specific role, and everyone else is just generic townsperson.
Mm-hmm.
The way this ends up working, and like I said, we were playing nine people games, so it was nine of us, plus the person running the game was the storyteller, kind of keeping everyone in check.
Yeah, it's. I have a game very similar to it, and it's better to, like, I haven't played Avalon, but I have played Resistance, but it's more like Werewolves of Miller's Hollow, where you have the two werewolves, every night they kill somebody, and the townspeople have to figure out who the werewolves are.
Yeah.
But this is a lot more in-depth than Werewolves, because, like, in both Werewolves and this game, the storyteller, the GM, is a player, or is not a player, is just a storyteller.
Yeah. So it actually depends. They have multiple versions that they're going to be releasing.
Yeah.
So they were using the base version, which is kind of the simple version during the day. They're playing the advanced ones at night, where it's two different sheets. Like, so we had those sheets with the 20 possible characters on them.
Yeah.
They have two other sheets with 20 different characters on each one that can make the game much different. Like, even there's one where there are multiple demons.
Okay.
And there are multiple people that could actually be registered as the demon, even if they're not the demon.
Yeah.
And the guy who ran it for us both times was actually saying one of the characters in one of the more advanced expansions could actually make there be zombies. So you could actually put the storyteller up for execution, because he might not actually be dead.
Yeah, and in one of them, there is a specific character that can be drawn that only the storyteller can nominate for execution.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
Yeah, exactly. And so you end up with... So in the base game that we're playing, like I said, there are 20 possible characters you could be. There's the town folk, the outsiders, the minions, and the actual demon.
Yeah.
There's only one demon in that thing. It's the imp.
Mm-hmm.
Every night, after everyone closes their eyes in the game, and the demon gets to select one character who has been murdered in the night. They can kill themselves if they want to, and the demon ship actually just moves over to whoever the minion was, and then there's just no minion anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing, though, is even when death happens, the person can still be involved in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They can't nominate people for execution, which I'll get to in a minute, but they can still vote. They get one vote after they're killed. So they have to kind of use it wisely, and they can still just take part in the conversation of why a person could be the demon.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if maybe they had a skill before they were killed that gave them enough insight into who the most likely person could be.
Yeah.
But
when you guys kill the gravedigger, I don't get any information. Come on now.
You were going to be so worthless, though. You were drunk. You would have never known what information you
got. Yeah, your information really was useless.
You never know.
But yes, and then the minions are... I think the one that we always got was the poisoner.
Yeah,
I think both games there was the poisoner. Which, each night, the poisoner gets an option to poison one other player, which does not kill them, but causes any information that they would gain during the night to be incorrect. So,
it also cancels out their power.
I thought it just made it incorrect, or is just the drunk make it incorrect?
Just the drunk makes it incorrect.
Oh, so they just, their power just doesn't happen
or
that
actually,
night.
So, well, actually, I think the poisoner...
The poisoner and the drunk are essentially the same thing. It makes their powers not work, but it
unreliable.
Unreliable, yeah.
I do think it says the poisoner, it cancels a character's power. So, like, if I had poisoned the monk who can protect one other player, they don't get to protect a player.
Okay.
But, I mean, he still woke me up and showed me your token. But he just showed me your wrong token. And you poisoned me. So, I don't really know exactly how it says in the rule book, but it seems like it's just, like, maybe they get the option to try to protect somebody, but it doesn't work. But they still wake you up and give you
Yes. So, because you never know that you're poisoned.
Yeah.
So if he didn't, not activate your power, you wouldn't have known that your power didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, instead of just, completely stopping you, you just, your power, you try to use it and it fails.
Yeah.
Which I think that was probably one of that was one of my favorite games that I played over the weekend, just because it had so much kind of versatility to it.
Yeah, those games are always super fun, but the unfortunate thing is you need, a huge group of people to actually play them. Like, I've played Werewolves of Miller's Hollow, and we only had, like, 7 people, rounds end in, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, there's always, the initial round where the werewolves wake up and they kill somebody automatically. Somebody just doesn't get to play, which is why I like how they did this game, where
you keep
the first night is the announcer dies, and you can argue against that, and then the next night, even if you died, you still at least get one more vote, which is nice.
Okay, so yeah, the poisoner is each night choose a player. Their ability malfunctions tonight and tomorrow day.
Okay.
So, your power as the grave digger who got to see the role of the person who was executed,
yeah,
still happens, but the information you get is going to be wrong.
Yeah, which is what he did, and it's the same with the drunk. Your power has a chance to malfunction as the drunkard.
Yeah, and so what ends up happening is, just going back to that, every night the demon gets to kill a person, unbeknownst to everybody else. Everyone's eyes are closed. Every day, it's everyone's job to try and deduce who the demon actually is. And some people have information. Some people have false information if they were drunk or poisoned.
Yeah.
They just don't know they were drunk or poisoned. The storyteller literally just gives them false information.
Yes.
Only the storyteller actually knows who everybody is. You can be a character and tell somebody who you are. So, like, in the one game that we all played together, I was the Slayer. And that character's ability was, one time during the game, it could single out somebody it thinks is the demon and kill them. And if, like, any time doesn't have to be during the execution phase, so it bypasses a vote. But if it's not, if they don't pick the demon, it just backfires and does nothing. And then they kind of, A, wasted their ability, and B,
outed themselves.
Yeah. The cool thing, though, is I'm pretty certain that, you know, had I not been the Slayer, had I been just, like, random character, I probably could have said, well, I'm the Slayer, and I say I'm going to kill you. And he probably would have went along with it, and it would have just not worked.
Yeah, he would have done the same thing he did for trying to kill someone who wasn't the demon.
Yeah, and that's how, like, the GM has to figure it out. Like,
exactly.
The GM has to play along with it if you're trying to, not cheat, but if you're trying to lie your way through it. Like, for instance, Erica was the demon.
Both times.
Yeah. So that says a lot about your wife.
She did not start as the demon in the first game.
Okay.
Another person was who killed themselves, and then she got it I think she was the poisoner.
Yep. Okay.
Drew was the drunk virgin in our first game.
Yep.
So, since Erica was the demon, she got to know what wasn't on the board.
She got to know 3 of the things that weren't used. So not all of them.
But she got to know 3 of the things that weren't used. Therefore, she was like, I can pretend to be something else. And he would have to play along with it if she tries to use the ability of the monk. But it was smart on her to pick something where the powers activate at night.
Yeah, which is most of them. The Slayer and I think 1 or 2 others were active that could be activated during the day. But for the most part, your stuff was a thing that was told to you during the night. Which, like, that's cool because then nobody other than you knows what you're told. So it's really just your word against everybody else's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, the whole idea is, like, you can tell everybody exactly what you are first day. You can be like, well, I'm the chef. And, like, people could trust you and believe that you're the chef and believe that the chef's ability was it knew if 2 of the evil players were sitting next to each other.
Yes.
So in that case, it could be like, oh, yeah, no, like, I'm the chef, and I was told that there is 1 pair of people sitting next to each other.
Yeah, and which no one listened to Jensen when she was saying it, but she said, when Drew died, I was not woken up at night. Therefore, Drew was evil, sitting next to somebody who was evil, which was either Sarah or Erica. And everybody picked Sarah first, and Sarah was not evil.
Yeah, and so every day, it's basically, you kind of argue amongst yourself for a few minutes, and then you have a vote. And the storyteller keeps it moving by not giving you too much time to discuss. So it comes down very quickly to, like, snap decisions of, like, well, fuck it, Drew's the demon.
Yeah.
And then everyone does a vote. If it's more than half of the group votes yes, Drew's dead.
Well,
he has...
They are the person currently up for execution.
Yeah.
That person or anyone else can then nominate any other player that's still alive. And if that person gets more votes to be executed, they become the person to be executed, and you've been saved.
Yeah.
And I think there was like a couple things, like I think it was the Virgin, if they get nominated and voted, then the person that nominated them actually gets killed instead.
If they're a townsfolk.
Yeah. Was it if they're a townsfolk or if they're good?
No, they're a townsfolk.
Okay.
So you could be an outsider and do it, and everything's fine. Or a demon or minion, actually, for that matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I'm definitely interested in checking out the Kickstarter for this when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think because it keeps everybody involved the whole time, even with a smaller group, like not too small, but like maybe like 5 or 6 people, it could still be a fast, fun game to play.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I understand like what you're saying with like that werewolf, where like as soon as people are killed, like they're out of the game and it just gets everyone whittled down very quickly.
Yeah, and it got to a point where I started developing variant rules where like, all right, if we're playing with less than 6 people, if you die, your next of kin comes in, so you get 2 deaths before you are actually out instead of just 1. So, this keeps people going, because, like, all right, I can listen in, and I can use my vote if I really think, or I can use my vote if, like, I don't believe somebody, or if I got information that no one else does.
There are a few places you can go play the game right now. If you're in Sydney, Australia, Boston, Massachusetts, San Francisco, California, Los Angeles, California, Seattle, Washington, Columbus, Ohio, Midlands, England, or the province of Pavia in Italy, there are Facebook groups on the game's website where they do meetups to play the game.
Yeah, like
you can try it out for free right now.
The guy who ran both of the demos we did runs the Boston group. That's why I don't know if you caught, but like the 3 signups were the cities that those people were from that were doing the demos. So that guy actually said he runs the MIT like board game group, and that game they'd been playing so much that he actually had to kind of like pull it back and be like, "We'll play this every other week."
Yeah, it's a super fun game, especially with it. Like we said, if you're playing with a bunch of people, you know. It makes it even better.
And honestly, like, it was fun with the strangers, but it was definitely better when we had a group of people we knew.
Yeah.
I mean, I think going into it a second time, if we had gone, like, the 4 of us and 5 randoms, it still even would have been better than the first time.
Oh, yeah, probably. Just
because, really, the first time it was a lot of, like, what can we say? Like, hesitation around what can we say. Yeah.
And you can even leave the group.
Anything. Yeah. You can say anything. Because nothing you say really 100% anyone can know to be true. Even yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's why it's cool, because, like, you kind of have to take everything at sort of with a grain of salt. Because, like, yeah, like, the way, like, the drunk class works is you pick out a token. You get a normal token. It might say that you're the gravedigger, but then the storyteller actually just decides, like, nope, the gravedigger is actually the drunk.
Yeah.
And this way, the whole game, you're going through it thinking you're the gravedigger and thinking you're being given the gravedigger information each night, but really, you're just being given nonsense because you're drunk.
Which, I mean, I hoped I was drunk, and I wish I found out sooner that I was drunk, because I would have played on that well.
But the thing is, you are never told.
Like, yeah, that's the whole point, just like with the poison. You're not supposed to know that you have the wrong information. This way, you're because, like, you were arguing, like, legitimately. Like, you honestly believed it was the information you were given. Whereas, like, if you knew it wasn't the information you were given, you might have played it up a little differently, and it would have been less convincing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's Blood on the Clock Tower.
I'm not sure the name of their company, but they have bloodontheclocktower.com.
Okay.
So, go there. Or if you just Google Blood on the Clock Tower game, you will find it.
So I am just going to run down the games that you and I were both involved in, Drew.
Okay.
So the first, this is in no particular order because I was just kind of going off of memory.
Sure.
The first one I have listed is Good Dog, Bad Zombie.
That was okay.
Yeah. So at one point we decided to just grab something out of the library and kind of sit down and kind of do something on our own.
Yeah.
And we had seen it was either Friday or Saturday we had seen it, because I think we did this on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a booth, and it's basically it's a game where you play as a bunch of dogs trying to save a bunch of humans after the zombie apocalypse. The dogs have set up a safe haven in Central Park, and the objective is literally to go find humans and then herd them back to Central Park.
Oh.
Without the humans getting eaten by zombies or the dogs being too scared by the zombies to the point where they become feral. You have 10 feral points before like it's game over, because the dogs have just reverted to a wolf-like state.
Okay.
But it's fairly simple.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, like the board's not huge. It's all card-based. The only time you roll a dice is to see where a new zombie is going to be placed after each turn.
Yeah.
So there's 18 there's 21
squares on the board.
Or I guess it's 18 plus 9. There's 27 squares on the board, but there's 18 like
numbered
spots that you would move to where the humans could be. And you're rolling a d20 at the end of your turn, and whatever number you roll is where the zombie goes. And if you roll a 19 or 20, you just pick where they go.
Okay.
Yeah. And you get movement cards, herding cards, and barking cards. And then you have two actions you can do at any turn. So you can either play one of those cards to either... A movement card will tell you how many spaces you can move. A herding card will tell you how many spaces you can herd something, whether it be a zombie or a human. And a barking card will tell you how many spaces you can bark a human or a zombie away from the spot that you are on. And then your other things are you can move one space just without a card. You can lick yourself to gain two cards. Or you can also lick another dog if you're both on the same spot to earn them two cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was something else.
You can sniff, which right. is how you find the humans when you're on the correct spot.
So
and you could chomp a zombie.
Yeah, so you get told... So there's three like cards face up each turn, and you put like a little token on the spot that correlates to that card.
Yeah.
And when you move a dog to that spot, you then use your sniff to flip that card and see like how the humans are hiding. And if it's a normal spot, sometimes it's something like non awful happens. Like you might have to do something to get the human to come out, but a lot of times it's like mostly beneficial.
Yeah.
There's danger spots though, which you know the dog has to either move to the other side of the board or give up all of its energy cards or like something like that to make it a little bit more negative.
Okay.
And then you have to make sure that you have either a herding or a bark card to then move the human the spaces you need back to Central Park without passing through any zombie spots, because the humans cannot pass through the same square as a zombie. The dogs can on their own though, and it's basically the zombies if they move into Central Park, you get feral points. If a human is eaten by a zombie, you get feral points. And you just kind of keep playing until you get, what was it, 9 humans?
The base was 6, but then you could play the harder mode, I think,
which
was
I think had 9. And yeah, like it was a cute game. It was like $35, though, which is a little... Much I don't think there's quite enough game there for that much money.
No.
Like, $20, totally. But it's not like you're not playing with, like, figurines or anything like that. They're just... You know, cardboard pieces folded in half in a little plastic stand. The board's not real big. Like Drew said, it's like 20. It's 21 spaces really that are used. But yeah, like not a bad game, just a little too expensive.
Yeah, sounds adorable, and I want it.
It is pretty adorable. So there are 8 playable dogs,
yes.
But also they said you could go online and make a dog card for your own dog if you wanted.
They also have an expansion, like Unexpected Allies or something like that, that include a pig, a cat, and 2 other animals that like you can play as.
Okay.
There was one other energy card, they called them, that Cobb didn't mention. All the dogs have an individual special ability.
Right.
That you need to have a good doggo card to be able to use. So it'll, like, the one I was playing as the Great Dane, and his special ability was to be able to move two spaces, chomp a zombie, which takes him off the board, and then move two more spaces.
Okay.
Or, you know, things like that.
It's amazing. I love it. I want more dog games.
Yeah, I mean, it is actually, like, it is a cool little concept, and someday when it's a little cheaper, like, I would probably buy it. Another cute game you guys played, I actually just watched this one, was Affectionate Cats and Cuddles.
Oh, right.
Which was like a dice game.
Yeah, that was a simple little quick thing.
Yeah, I think it took you guys maybe 10 minutes to play around.
If that, and that was with the 2 minutes of the guy explaining the game.
Yeah, it was basically just roll the dice, and then if you had matching pieces, you got like a token. Is that what it was?
So you're using a six-sided die. There were six different things. Actually, I don't even know if it was six things that could come up. But, like, there was cute, there was the human, there was the you were bad, and then there was one other thing. I would say there were four different things on the six-sided die. And you just play until all the cute tokens get taken out of the middle. And sometimes the things you would get would let you steal one from someone else. Sometimes you got caught being bad and had to put one back. It's neat. It was cute.
Yeah. And then we also played a quick round of Shuffling Horror, which was that zombie dice deck game thing.
I don't remember that one.
We played it on Sunday. It was the drive-in theater themed one, like the movie-based one.
Oh, that's what that was called?
Yes, it was Shuffling Horror, and then it had two different versions. It had Pittsburgh, which was the zombie version, and Roswell, which was the sci-fi alien version.
Okay.
We did Pittsburgh with the zombies.
Right. Okay, that's why I was confused on the name.
I literally had to go through all of the pictures that Erica posted on Instagram to find a picture of the game, because I had no idea what it was called. That game was okay. It was a little more complicated than it probably needed to be.
Yeah, that one's a little more, definitely more complicated.
So it was like, it was themed after a movie. So like every game had like multiple rounds that were supposed to be like different reels of a film. And like the playmat was like set up to look like a drive-in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a cooperative like battling game where one player was like the zombies and everything. And all of the other players were basically the characters in the movie trying to not be killed by zombies.
Okay.
If you do get killed by the zombie, though, you too can become a zombie and then, like, fight cooperatively with that character, like, that player. It was just a lot of moving pieces, it seemed. Like, with, the, like, the way that, and the guy did a very quick demo for it.
Yeah.
So, like, it never really had time to sink in, but it was this very, like, here's your character, and then we're gonna move here. I'm like, wait, what the fuck just happened? And there's a lot of dice rolling for, like stat checks. It was very D&D in that sense. Like, your card had various stats, and you were rolling as basically like a check to see whether or not you could do it based on your stats.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so there were like four stats, and you rolled 2d6, and were trying to roll under the number on your card.
Okay.
But like, it was one of those, like, I think Drew, you had like a 7 in something.
Yeah.
And I had that same stat, but it was like 6.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It was like strength, speed.
Yeah, I think you
something
had
something and something.
I think I had like a 6 in strength and you had a 7 in speed. So it's like, well, he's faster, so he should have the gun, but you're stronger, so you should have the tire iron.
Yeah.
And then like you pick those weapons and you have to roll to see if you get them, and then you have to roll to see if you kill a zombie with it. Like, it wasn't bad. It was just, it seemed like a bit much for like what could have been a very, very more basic card game without the dice mechanic.
I don't think they were going for a basic game.
No, but like, I think it could have been done easier and a little more user-friendly without all the dice.
Because
I feel like that just added an unneeded layer.
I like games where you roll dice, so.
Fucking personally, nerd.
Like,
no, I mean,
could it have been done more simply? Yes, but I'm not opposed to that extra level of random.
I don't dislike the dice rolling aspect. I just don't. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to work well. Like, it just, the game just seemed more complicated than it needed to be.
I just feel like the way they did, like, they could have designed it a different way, sure, but the way they went with it, like, if you didn't roll dice, the human characters would just steamroll.
That's probably true.
Like, I'm pretty sure we wound up seeing the one zombie card that was a 7 was the King of Zombies. So that was probably the strongest card if my 8 speed or, like, my 7 strength, like, was the same as its strength.
Yeah.
So, like, if you didn't have that chance to fail, you would just always win.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, like, I'm sure if we would have had more time and, like, gotten a little more slower of an explanation, it probably wouldn't have seemed so sort of convoluted. But it was very, like, I think we were only at the table for maybe, like, 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I think the only other thing we all played was Fireball Island.
Yep. I can't think of anything else we all played.
Fireball Island was cool, though. Did you see that one at all, Rich?
I saw it all over the place.
It's a neat game. It's an old game, too.
It's a, like, updated version of an old game. Yeah.
Okay.
I had the original back in the day.
So it's an escape from an island game. You're a tourist on an island that turns out that island should not have tourists on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the idea is move around the island, don't get your shit stolen, but collect as many treasures as you can, and then get the fuck off the island.
Okay.
So every player has a little card that shows all the scoring for the game. There is a big red gem that's right at the base of the totem at the top of the mountain that's spitting out the fire. That's worth 7 points. There is the lucky penny, which is in this thing that you can only get to at the end of the game if you're the first person to get back to the helicopter. And then there are the treasures that are around the board.
Treasures and photos.
Oh, and okay, and then there are photos. The treasures, you get more points depending. There are 3 different colors. The more of each color you have, so if you have 5 of the same color, it's worth 15 or whatever.
But okay, if you got a 6th one of that, it's still just worth the 15.
Okay.
But, like, 1 is 1, 2 is 3, 3 is 5. Like, it goes up like that.
Makes sense.
And then there were 4 different colored photos?
No, there were three different color photos.
I thought there was 4 colors.
No, there were 3 colors, and each one had 2 different colors. So there was, like, a dark yellow border and a light yellow border.
Right, and but you can only get 1 of the yellows.
Right.
And then I think that was one of the win scenarios.
If you got all 3 photos, you could leave.
Yeah, or the way that you kind of trigger the, like, ending scenario is one player gets 1 of each of the photos, or you fill up all 4 fireball slots for the mountain.
Which, okay. So, the game is played, how you move is by playing a card. Everyone will have 2 cards in their hand, and some of the cards are Cataclysm cards. And every time you play a Cataclysm card, it adds 1 marble to the Scar, it's called, and once 3 Cataclysm cards are played, that's when the other end game could trigger, which happened on, I think, our first turn.
No, it was like our 3rd turn.
No, it was, I think it was our 2nd then.
Yeah, so I think we had all, like, almost everybody got our what are they called again?
Cataclysm
cards, like, in, like, the first deal.
And you all played them.
Yeah. Well, so, like, for me, like, it was that, or I think, like, a move 2, and that one actually had a higher move on it.
Mm.
So it just made sense. Like, I wanted to move as quickly as I could. But then you also get to drop those fireballs into, like, the top of the mountain, and usually you also get to turn the mountain if you wanted.
Yeah.
Or the trees all had little lines on them, too, that if you turned would block paths.
Okay.
So the characters could still move over them, but the marbles wouldn't follow them. They would stop and, like, get rerouted.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is you would drop these 4 marbles into the mountain, which had 3 different paths it could follow, and hopefully they would follow a path and knock a player over. If they moved a player, you just move somebody to another spot. If the player actually falls over, though, you get to steal a treasure from them unless they had a card to negate that.
Okay.
And then there was also spots or cards that would let you flick fireballs. So all around the board, there were just little orange marbles that if you played one of these cards that had a flick a fireball card, you could just kind of, you weren't supposed to actually flick it. You were just kind of supposed to, like, tap it to make it, like, fall and, like, roll down a path. And same idea. If it knocks a player over, you get to take a treasure.
Okay.
I think if you knock yourself over, you actually have to put a treasure into, like, the bank. so that at the end of the game, every time a player finishes, they get to pick something out of the bank as like an extra treasure, basically.
Sounds silly. Sounds fun.
Yeah, it wasn't super complicated, but it was really cool. A little expensive, isn't it? Like a $90 game.
It's $75 for the base game, and then there are three expansions or something like that.
That board was so big, I'm not surprised.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really well made because none of that shit looks like it should sit as sturdy as it does, but it does.
Yeah.
Like, if you bump the board, everything falls, but moving the characters around, I felt like every time I was moving, all those marbles should fall, and they just never did.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, I think some of the expansions were like, there's like a bee, like one of the expansions involves bees, where you literally just have a cup full of little marbles that you get to pour into the mountain, and it just like scatters.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so it was really cool, though. I liked it.
I actually won on the last turn by 1 point, because Cobb had the red gem, and Erica actually got to the helicopter first. So whoever has the red gem, if you jump over them as you move, you steal it from them, unless you have the card that stops someone from stealing a thing from you. So Cobb was on the spot to get to the helicopter, but his move ended there, so he didn't actually get onto the helicopter. Erica then moved, jumped him to get on the helicopter, would have stolen it, but Cobb had the item to save it. So, but she got to the helicopter first, so she got the thing that gave her 6 points. And then I was able to move, jump him, and get on the helicopter. And since he no longer had the card to save himself, I stole the red gem, worth 7, and wound up winning by 1 point.
So what I'm hearing is Druten is a dirty thief.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
All right.
I stole the gem from Cobb and the win from Erica.
Dirty thief.
Do you have any other games you wanted to mention, though?
There was that hockey game was there that seemed like it could be kind of cool. Maybe a little overly complex.
Sports games usually are.
They're either overly complex or incredibly simple, like that baseball game we played last year.
That
is true.
That baseball game was very simple.
Although, and then that hockey game could have gotten even more complex with the cards that they added in that gave the different players powers. But it'll definitely be something I look for when it actually comes out, because the playmat was cool. It was made off the hockey gridded out map. Would also be kind of funny to use that for a D&D battle. Look, oh, you're in this hockey rink.
Oh, boy.
Fighting some demon hockey players. But yeah, no. I don't think there was anything else we played.
All right. So just some of the other stuff that I got to see. So we already talked about Codenames. We also played this other Harry Potter game. It wasn't the cool-looking one that was at the table where, like, Munchkin and stuff was.
Right.
Because that one just never had a free spot. That was like a Fantastic Beasts themed game.
Right.
But there was like another little booth that had, it was Harry Potter Magical Beasts. It apparently came out the year that the first Fantastic Beasts movie came out.
Okay.
It was okay. You play as one of like the four, there were four pieces, but Harry, Ron, and Hermione were the only three that I remember. I don't remember who the fourth piece was.
Probably Neville.
Maybe. But you're basically playing in the castle and on the grounds of Hogwarts, trying to find the magical creatures that have escaped.
Okay.
And there are spaces on the board that cause the board to actually, like, flip over, like a storybook. And those spaces have, like, cutouts in them, so that when you flip it, your character stays in the same spot, just on a different side of the board, basically.
Yeah.
The other character's not so lucky, and they get knocked off the board. So you actually get to place your opponent anywhere on the board you want after flipping it.
Okay.
But then it's just each side of the board has different things to go find. It's like size, color, location, and classification. So you need to land on each of those spots to then draw a card from each of like those situations. And the idea is you have to get the four cards that match up to a particular type of monster. And you'll generally have, like, you have, like, a little, like, index card of, like, all the potential monsters it could be. And, you know, some of them are maybe, like, I think, like, the one Erica got, that one, it was, like, black from, like, London, and it was, like, a classification 5, and, what was the other thing I said? And size, like, large or medium. And it would happen to be, like, a snake of some sort, I believe. I don't remember exactly what it was. But, like, hippogriffs were on there, dragons were on there, and it was just a matter of going to all these spots and drawing the cards until you had the four that matched one full monster. It was not hard. Wasn't much to it. It maybe took 15 minutes to play. But, like, it was okay. We also played and then spent way too much money on a game called Epic PvP. It was like it's a card battling game.
Okay.
But not like a trading card game. Like, mm-hmm. It's all self-contained.
The original version has like a white box with black lettering and it's just, no, that's Super Fight. Never mind. Continue.
Yeah, no, this is actually,
it's vaguely Hearthstone.
Yeah, Hearthstone's a better thing. I was using Munchkin just based on like the fantasy of the base Munchkin. But it's, you start the game by picking a race and a class. On the base, like, fantasy set, the races are fantasy races. Dwarf, halfling, elf, I think there were others that I'm just drawing a blank on. And then classes are, you know, rogue, wizard, archer, I think might have been one of them. And each of those things that you pick has, like, a corresponding deck of cards that goes with them. So you take your class and your race, put them down, shuffle the decks together, and then it'll tell you what your race's health is, which in fantasy, it's basically all four. So you draw four cards, put them to the side, that's your health. Each time you get attacked, you lose a health, and that gets discarded. And then it's just really, you're battling it out with different... You just keep drawing cards into your hand of, like, I think it was five cards to a hand, and it'll have, like, attacks on it, and the attacks will have a cost. Each turn, you know how, like, did you ever play Hearthstone?
Yeah.
So you know how, like, every turn you gain a little bit more mana?
Yeah.
So in this, it's the same thing. Every turn you gain two more aggro is what they call it, but you don't lose it for like, spending it on an attack.
Okay.
You only lose it when you want to draw more cards into your hand because you're running out.
Okay.
So that kind of keeps it going, and you can quickly build up to higher cards depending on what's in your hand already. And yeah, it's the cool thing is every card does a defense turn and an offense turn. So when you first play your cards, you play them as defense, and then once your turn's over, you flip them to offense, and your opponent plays their cards in defense. And you can do a lot of back and forth without ever actually doing damage to each other, because you really have to find that, like, right combination to, like, get them to a point where they can't counterattack you.
Yeah.
And every time you land an attack, it's just one damage away. So even if, like, your thing is doing five damage to your opponent's card, it's only actually taking one damage away from your opponent's, like, health pool.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But we ended up purchasing the base game and the expansion, which has a really cool box that all the cards fit into for both sets. But the expansion adds, like, magical creatures to it. So, like, satyrs and pixies and shit like that, and, what is Medusa's species called?
Gorgons.
Yeah, Gorgons. I thought that was it. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right. And then a bunch of, like, new races, or new classes, I'm sorry, that definitely changed the game up. Like, Erica played as a satyr with, I forget what the class was she picked, but they, barbarian, maybe? I think she was, like, a satyr barbarian. But the satyr had, like, this ability where anytime it, like, took damage, you got wine tokens on you. You got two wine tokens, which caused you to have to discard cards out of your deck every time, or out of your hand. I might be getting that wrong. But it was basically at the end of your turn, you had to discard stuff, and then you would flip the two tokens, and if they landed with the wine symbol facing up, you kept them. If they landed with the satyr facing up, you got to get rid of them. But, like, I almost, so one of the lose scenarios is if your deck runs out.
Okay. Yeah.
Because once your deck runs out, you can't put more aggro down. Like, you're basically done. I was, because of those wine cards, I almost lost when we were playing, like, at home.
Okay.
I was down to my final three cards, and I would have needed four cards for the next turn. Two for aggro, two for the satyr thing. And I just got lucky, and I just kind of threw my entire hand out, because I happen to have enough points for it. And Erica drew the wrong two cards to counter, and couldn't actually counter me, so I was able to take away her last three health. Because, like, if she had drawn one other card that could have countered me, I would have lost, because she would have countered my attacks, I would have done no damage to her, and then my deck would have run out, and that would have been my last health point.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really cool, and it can be played 2v2, a three-person kind of like battle royale, or 2-on-2, where you work cooperatively out of a shared health pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So let's see. That was there. That. The only other thing that we played then was it was a deck building game called Star Realms. It was super easy. It was just a it was like a space themed thing where you both start with the same amount of health. You both start with 50 health, and it seemed like it was going to take fucking forever to play. And it did end up taking us close to an hour to play a round. But once the game starts going and you've built your deck up, it goes from maybe doing one damage a turn to doing like 15 damage a turn. And you run into these cards where some cards will do damage and also heal you. And if you play the right combination of cards, you might do like 10 damage to your opponent and also get yourself healed for 10 damage.
Yeah, deck building games, they're super fun, and they, once you get into them and understand how to play, they're really easy to play, and they're really quick and super fun. Generally fairly simple as well.
Yeah, and that was the nice thing with this one. Like, we played that game last year, that Mystic Veil game.
Yeah.
Which was deck building, and not complicated, but definitely had a little more to it than this one did. This one was very, like, the guy literally, he came over, he walked us through two kind of turns, and then just kind of stood back, and then eventually just wandered away entirely, because every turn is basically the same thing. It's, you have your five cards in your hand, they all have some sort of value to them. If they have like a monetary value, you use them to purchase more cards. If they have a combat value, you use them to attack. If they have a health value, you use them to heal. You play as many of them as you can. Whatever you don't play, you discard. And then once your deck is done, you shuffle your discard pile back in and start over. And every card you purchase off the board each turn just goes into your discard until you shuffle them back into your deck.
Yeah, that's generic deck building.
Yeah. Game. Yeah,
Marvel Legendary is the same way. It's, you get the cards that you can buy more cards with, you get the cards that you can attack with, and then, I don't remember if there's healing in that one, but you have cards that, like, maybe you can defend from, like, taking too much damage with.
Yeah, so this game had, base cards that allowed you to, they were, like, permanent cards, so they stayed on the board. And they had some sort of, like, shielding to them. So they had whatever their base effect was, whether it was damage or healing or money. And you got that every turn it was active. But it also had, like a 4 or 5 or something like that in a shield that was basically what your opponent had to do damage-wise before it could be destroyed.
Yeah.
And silver ones could be, like, ignored, where you could just leave that there. It's going to do all of its effects, but you can attack your opponent directly and lower their health. Or black shields that you had to take them out before you could do damage to your opponent.
Okay.
So that was cool, because there were a few times where, you know, maybe the 5 cards you drew didn't have enough attack power to do any damage. So it was just kind of a wasted turn, or you were just using the cards with monetary value to get more, like, useful cards. And then once your deck was starting to get built, you start out the game very basic. You get 8 cards worth 1 coin. And 2 cards worth 1 damage. And they get shuffled together, and that is your deck for the first few hands.
Yeah.
Once you actually start accumulating stuff, though, you can just start basically throwing away those single cards so you don't get them in your rotation anymore and they're not taking up space in your hand. And some cards actually have, like, an extra value where if you discard or if you destroy it, like put it into a scrap pile, you get an extra bonus that turn that you scrap it. And then a lot of cards had some sort of color value to them. It's like a blue or a yellow or a green. If you play multiple of the same color, certain cards would get like a bonus. Like maybe it did 2 extra damage, or it healed you for 4 extra points or something like that. So there was like a benefit to buying a lot of the cards that have the same color to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was also a cool game. We did not buy that one just because we probably would not end up playing it as much, because it is just a 2-player game.
Well, I mean, it's just the 2 of you, so maybe you would end up playing it more often than you think.
Probably not.
But what was the name of the game again?
Star Realms.
Star Realms, okay.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. And I think it was like $15 for the base set.
Okay.
So, like, not expensive either. But yeah, that was all the games at PAX Unplugged.
Well, not all the games, but just all the games.
Yeah, all the games we played.
Yeah, there were way more games there.
We also, Drew and I, went and saw League of Heels, PAX Wrestling.
Yeah.
On Sunday morning, where they played...
Smack Talk Showdown.
Thank you, because I was drawing a blank.
Which is a wrestling promo game. So, it seemed like there were four separate decks of cards. A light blue deck and a dark blue deck that you draw one of each from to get your wrestling character. Like, what were some of the names that they had?
Burning Flame, Professor Flame?
It was Professor Flame. No, it was Professor Burning versus the Strong Flame.
There you go.
Was one matchup that wound up happening.
Poor Professor Burning. I wonder what it's like to live his life.
So you'll get things. It's basically adjective noun kind of thing.
Yeah.
Only some of the people didn't know that there were two different decks.
One person did.
Yeah, so they literally picked two of the same color card to form their name.
It wound up working out okay still, because they were like something macho or whatever, but it also played into that person's League of Heel persona where he's the bad listener. So he told, and he drew two cards of the same.
It was mostly like game designers, like one of the guys from Cards Against Humanity was on the panel, a tabletop RPG guy, Luke Crane, who did Burning Wheel and Mouse Guard, was there. I forget who the bad listener was from.
I forget. Could look it up.
But yeah, it was mostly like game designers. But then there were actually two local real wrestlers.
There were two local wrestlers, two guys from Chikara.
Oh, right. There was the unicorn. And then there was
Unicorn Party from Kaiju Big Battle, who happened to also be in town that weekend, which is why he was there.
So there were three wrestlers.
There was supposed to be a fourth wrestler, but she got sick, and Pat Bear filled in for her.
So once they pick their persona, they are then given a location and a reason for their fight. And they basically have to do like a wrestling promo on why they're fighting based on the criteria they were given.
Okay.
And then, to make it complicated, the person reading off the cards can add like modifiers. Like the one guy had to, sing it like a Christmas carol.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez.
And like another guy had to do like, runway poses.
Okay.
So like just goofy shit like that.
Another one had to just like flex.
Yeah, he had to pose like he was in a photo shoot.
The crowd had to sing the YMCA for 10 seconds. Another, they had to chant boring for 10 seconds.
That's neat.
So, yeah, it was very goofy and like would definitely be a good party game for a large party.
Yeah.
But like if you only had like 5 or 6 people around, like probably not as much fun.
Yeah.
Because it definitely worked because there was a crowd full of people to clap and cheer when they said stupid shit.
Yeah, makes sense.
And also, since, you know, League of Heels has a lot of the wrestling fandom, they caught on to the cheap pop of constantly saying the name of the place that the match is supposedly happening in.
Even though it was never Philadelphia, the closest it got was Yonkers, New York.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of them was in Moscow, Russia.
I think it was St. Petersburg, Russia.
There you go. I knew it was Russia.
There was, like, Montana, like it was all random places.
I know. I really wanted the guy from Cards Against Humanity to win.
He was really funny.
So the guy from Cards Against Humanity came out as the lumber snack. He was just like a lumberjack, but he had an axe made out of snacks
and brought a bag full of food.
Yeah, and he had like one of those beer helmets with two water bottles in it though. But he straight up came out with like a Minnesotan accent.
The whole time.
And, like, what, like the real, real thick, almost Canadian Minnesota accent.
Okay.
So, he did. He held it the whole time.
He held it the whole time, and the funny thing, so he got through the first round. The first round, they didn't use the smack cards, where it is the little modifier, like the boring or whatever. In his second round match, one of the cards that got played for him was he had to speak in a Canadian accent, which he basically was just doing already.
Yeah. He literally like stopped and goes, okay.
And then just kept doing the same accent.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, his was fun. The whole thing was actually a lot of fun. Just because like it's goofy.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And at one point, they did actual wrestling for like 30 seconds. Yeah. Like, one guy jumped off the stage onto another guy, and everyone clapped.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds fun. I heard that there was, a D&D Beyond panel there with, a D&D roulette thing or something that I would have gone to. Had I known about it. I don't know what day it was, but...
There were a lot of panels.
Yeah. There was tons of panels. Last year, I didn't go to any. This year, I was only there for one day.
Yeah, I don't... Normally, I go to panels at conventions because they're usually talking about things that I'm a little more... Not that I'm not interested in board games, but, like, a lot of the panels are very, like... Like, they're either tabletop D&D focused or they're learn how to play this game. And, like, that's just... I'd rather just literally go play a game rather than go to a panel where they're talking about the game.
Yeah.
And I don't care about D&D, so that holds nothing for me.
Well, now your wife does.
That's fine. She said she was going to read some of the stuff that you left for her and work more on her character story.
Nice.
So
she's going to have the most developed character in our campaign, Drewton.
My character has plenty of backstory.
He does have a lot of
backstory. Well, like, I know I told you about this actually yesterday while you were over. I don't think Erica actually mentioned it while you were around. That I'm not going to say their name on here because I actually don't want to give them any publicity. That game that was on the far corner that we tried to play a couple times but was always super packed.
Oh, yeah, up in the front.
Yeah, so, well, I guess it was the last aisle.
Corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Erica had gone right to their table first thing Sunday morning while we were at the panel.
Right.
Because the day before, and to be fair, the guy that was there Saturday night, super cool. He was doing like a list. He was texting people when they had openings and literally told us, he's like, I think I'm going to have to just make a new list in the morning. A lot of the people have already left from this one, and I don't know if they're going to be here tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He's like, come over tomorrow morning. I will put you on this for whatever time you want to play. He was not there when Erica got over there, though, and the person she talked to was apparently a huge douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard part of that with the whole, like, oh, yeah, no, we're not doing that. Why would we do a list? There's too many people. If we did a waiting list, no one would get to, like, he was a real shitty person. He also apparently told her that she shouldn't bother playing D&D. She was going to ruin the experience for everybody else she was playing with because she has never played before.
Oh, no, she did mention...
Okay, I didn't know if you were around when she said that. Maybe she said that that night when you and Sarah came over.
I think that's when she did say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, elitist douchebags. I can't stand
it. Yeah, like, what a piece of shit. Like...
Because, like, sure, there are definitely some people that adding a noob in there would probably hate their experience playing with someone who's entirely brand new, but...
I would make it, like, that's why I made sure her character was an easy enough character for a newbie. Yeah. Like, if she wanted to be a cleric, I probably would have been like, if that's what you want, that's what you want, but there's a lot to know about a cleric, or there's a lot to know about a paladin. She's like, well, I want to be a rogue. I'm like, all right, that's easy enough for a newbie. Let's get you in there.
Paladin, I sort of agree on, because, like, well, there is the esoteric level of paladin where they should all be lawful good and never kill anybody.
Well, I mean, I say there's a lot to know about a cleric, I mean, like, how long was Vogel a cleric and before he realized he could change his spells every night?
Vogel sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's be fair here. He's bad at games.
Yes.
Didn't he like spec out his paladin to not actually be a paladin?
No, or he something like that? Out his cleric to not really be a cleric.
There is something crawling up your lamp.
Yeah, it's a bug.
Okay.
I've been seeing it fly around. So.
Okay. But for some reason I thought one of you had said that like his paladin didn't actually know how to heal or something like that.
No, it was his cleric.
That's even worse.
I was the primary healer as a bard. Like he was a combat cleric with a knowledge-based domain. So he knew all the languages, and he could barely fight, and he would never heal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to play D&D beyond, like, very, very top level. I know a little bit more just from you going over all the stuff with Erica now.
Yeah.
But, like, even I fucking know a cleric's a healer.
And that's the thing, like, he made his cleric to where, like, a knowledge domain cleric is a good cleric for roleplay. Guess what he is not good at?
Roleplay.
Exactly.
Like, I think he is also the same asshole who always rolled Shadow Priests in WoW when he played a priest.
Probably, yeah.
Because why not use the class that everybody needs and play them in the way that nobody wants?
Yep. Yeah. And, well, and, like, yeah, the in the base player's handbook, the cleric section's, I think, the biggest.
It is.
Because yeah. It has all the different domains. Wizard might be just as big. I don't know. Wizard has all the different schools. I don't think there are as many schools as there are the cleric domains.
I think there's equal amounts.
So, like, cleric and wizard look incredibly daunting in the book, because instead of being, like, rogue is, like, 3 pages for the entirety of rogue, cleric and wizard are, like, 9.
Which, I mean, does make sense.
Which, yeah, and...
But, like, seriously,
and
like...
And then that's not counting the 100 pages of the spell list.
Yeah.
But...
Like, it's one of those, at least, like, from an outsider perspective, if you're playing for the first time and you want to play a cleric, you fucking just go base heal. Like, that's what you're going to be expected to do. Don't get fucking stupid and fancy. If you want to cast magic spells and do damage, be a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
Yeah.
Cleric is for healing, wizard is for fighting.
Yeah, and you can be a battle cleric, but you have to remember you have to heal. Like, the fact is...
Or at least have somebody else in the party that can heal as well as you.
And that was me, but I ended up being the one doing all the healing.
But yeah, you couldn't heal as well. Like, yeah. if you were a druid instead of a bard, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're
bards,
a red mage.
Bards can get healing, cure wounds.
Yes.
I just never picked it up.
But it's the second tier heals that druids and clerics get that bards don't.
We get third class, though. I get Revivify if I want.
You also get the first and third level heals, but not the second and fourth.
Yeah, I don't get mass cure wounds or anything like that. Or prayer of healing, which is very necessary in D&D.
Like, I apologize because it's still the only example I can work with. It's like in WoW, if you're a druid, you can, like, kind of heal.
Yeah.
But you should not go into, like, a complicated dungeon as the healer.
Right.
Unless, now you can. Now, like, the spec trees for that game have been so fucked that, like, class barely matters from what I've seen.
Yeah.
But, like, back in, like, 2005, like, yeah, you would not roll into anything beyond, like, the second dungeon you could do with a druid as the healer, unless it was fully specced in that, like, field. Because I think it was still, like, one of those, like, you didn't get the resurrection spell until fairly late, and it was a bad resurrection at the time. Like, you could only do it once, and it needed, like an item just to do it. Whereas, like, a priest or a paladin gets, like, resurrect fairly early and can just do it as often as they want, essentially.
Yeah.
It works fairly similar in D&D.
I figured.
Yeah.
Like there's a reason that, like, characters are...
Mm-hmm.
Can... There's a reason that you associate certain characters with certain things, and it's not for fun.
Yeah. There's a reason that me being in some of the other groups that I've been in, me being the most experienced player, I tend to be the cleric, because I understand the necessity of a cleric.
Which, like, I don't know.
I should have overruled Vogel and been the cleric at the very beginning.
You know what? It doesn't matter. I mean, we could have had multiple clerics.
We could have.
Beyond, like, the whole idea of just, like, there's a lot to know about it. Like, I feel like the cleric isn't probably that difficult when it comes to, like, actual combat, because it's just a matter of knowing what your healing spell is and paying attention to everybody else to make sure that, like, if your health is low, fucking heal you.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's the, like, I don't remember if he had heavy armor as a knowledge domain.
No.
But he played like he did.
Yes.
He played front lines. Even though he didn't have heavy armor. Whereas if he had taken the life domain or light domain? Life.
Life.
Life domain, he would have had heavy armor. He is a battle healer at that point.
Like, but he never learned any healing spells, right?
He learned healing spells. Yeah. He just didn't use them.
Nice.
I was the one, because his healing spells were, like, took an action to heal, whereas my healing spells are a bonus action, so I could attack and then heal somebody as well. So I could yell at somebody and they get health, where he has to go over and actually physically touch somebody and get... But my healing was a D4, his healing was a D8 or 6. I can't remember. So it's like he could heal twice as much as me, but I was the one always healing because he wanted to fight things and use spiritual weapon.
That's the thing he kept fucking doing, right?
Which, spiritual weapon, at the beginning of...
could, but...
At the beginning of a fight, a major fight, spiritual weapon... Fantastic use of your spell slot.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just a random encounter, don't bother with spiritual weapon. Use, like, that's the one unfortunate thing about most clerics, is you don't get any attacking cantrips, which if you did, then they would be a little bit more useful. Well,
I mean, I think that's to discourage the clerics from wasting their turns constantly doing mage.
Yeah. But it's like,
if you wanted to do that, you would be a druid or a bard.
Yeah.
You're a cleric. Play your fucking role.
But we digress. Back to PAX if there's anything else.
No, I think that was it. Erica is excited for Friday.
Yeah, she seemed very excited.
Yeah. She's got her set of dice that she bought. And
yeah. I told her she's adorable because she has a binder and everything. I'm like, you're so cute.
Yeah, she didn't know, like, before I left, she said she was going to, like read, like, the book that you had left and, like, fill out more of, like, the backstory. And she's like, I don't know how much I should write down, though. I'm like, as much or as little as you want, but the more you have sort of in your pocket, the easier it'll be if things come up for you to reference, like, stuff about your character.
She, the only thing she needs to do when she walks in is let me read her character sheet so I know her backstory.
Yeah,
She wants to lie out her ass about her backstory to everybody else, that's her. That's what she wants to do.
Yeah, and I actually said, because she's like, yeah, there's only so much room, though, so, like, I have to, like, shorthand stuff. I'm like, or write down little notes there, and then write the details in your notebook off to the side.
Yeah.
Just so you know where to reference, and then if something pops up and, like, you're not sure, like, you can go back and be like, oh, yeah, no, that is a thing that I did.
Like, I have an entire character backstory written in my keep on my Google Keep, because I love the backstory, and one of these days I'm actually going to have a campaign that I can utilize it in. I had it for one session. But yeah, it's just, you eventually just memorize your backstory and you just know it. But yeah, just write it down anywhere so that you know it and people don't.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's all for PAX Unplugged. Do you guys want to move into news?
Sure.
All right. So, first news I'm going to start with is one that you had actually sent on Facebook a few days ago. Blade Runner is apparently getting an anime series on Cartoon Network and Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be set in 2032, which I guess is between the two movies, if I remember correctly. Because I think I never saw the new one, but wasn't that Blade Runner 2049?
I don't remember. I didn't see it either. I can't remember.
That sounds right.
And I know, I want to say, like, the first one was, like, in the 2020s?
Yeah. I saw Blade Runner once, and I didn't really like it.
But yeah, so that's coming, I'm not super stoked about an anime for it. I've seen the original once or twice, like, years ago. I never saw the sequel, and, yeah, I don't know, a Blade Runner anime just doesn't super appeal to me, but you had sent a message to us about it, so I thought maybe it appealed to you for some reason.
I honestly wasn't sure if you guys were into it, but I like anime, so I wouldn't mind checking it out. But like I said, I don't think it was any of the director's cuts or anything. I think it was like the original cut of Blade Runner, or it was one of the bad cuts of Blade Runner that I saw. And there's a specific cut that you watch that people say is the best way to watch it. I never saw it that way, so I can't really say.
And everybody has a different opinion about what the best cut to watch is, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of anime, though, we did finally finish Bleach.
Nice.
Yeah, it was an all right ending.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice ending for what they had. I wish they would have kept going.
Yeah. I have made Erica watch 2 episodes of Naruto because I haven't decided what to actually watch next.
Yeah.
That show didn't age well in the original series.
No, it didn't.
Not at all.
No.
So Joe Russo has said, he told USA Today, Chris Evans may not be done as Captain America after all. His exact quote was, I think it was more emotional for him than it was for us, mostly because he's not done yet. I don't want to explain what I mean, but audiences will soon understand.
I mean, it has been known that, like, yes, his contract is up, but he never wanted to lose the role. He wanted to keep the role, he just wanted to...
At one point he actually said, like, after the contract was up, he was going to not do it anymore.
I remember hearing, like, he just wanted to take a break from the role and go into directing more so than acting.
Yeah, but that was basically he wanted to step away from the role too, which wouldn't be putting, like, he couldn't really put it on hold. But at another point he did come out at another time and say something about, like, maybe he wouldn't actually leave it at the same time, but it was kind of assumed that he was going to be ending it with Avengers 4.
Yeah.
But it seems like maybe he's not. And, like, honestly, like, I'm mostly okay with that. He's a real good Captain America.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's anybody else out there that could actually be Captain America after that.
Bucky.
No, but I mean, like...
You're saying Steve Rogers.
Yeah,
I know.
Rogers.
I'm kidding.
Like, I'm... Sebastian Stan or Sam Wilson, or fuck, his name's not Sam Wilson.
What is his name? I can't even remember.
Oh, now I'm drawing a fucking blank because now I just keep thinking of character's name. But yeah, those two guys can, would be perfectly good Captain Americas, but like, Chris Evans definitely nailed Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Also going on the Marvel train, fucking Daredevil was canceled.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were already signed for another season.
Yeah, no.
I didn't realize that they, like, that the contract for the season was up, like, or not the season, but their contract was up, entirely. And that's a bummer, but at this point it's not a surprise anymore.
Yeah, so it's Jessica Jones and Punisher are all that's left. Both of them are already signed for one more season. So I'm assuming after Punisher season 2 and Jessica Jones season 3 air, that'll be it.
Yeah. Anthony Mackie's name.
Thank you. I just watched him in Steel last, or not in Steel, in Real Steel last night with Hugh Jackman.
Rock'em Robots?
That's a bad fucking movie, guys. Oh, yeah. I'd seen it before, like, back around when it came out on, like, DVD, and boy, is that still a bad movie.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. But yeah, it's a bummer that Daredevil's gone, but again, not surprised anymore. With all the cancellations that they've done where, like, arguably, Iron Fist season 2 was one of the better seasons they've done in a long time. Like, and they cancel it, but they kept it going after season 1, which season 1 was, as much as I do enjoy it, it wasn't good.
No, you had it right. It was terrible.
Like,
did you finish Daredevil season 3?
I did.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
I put that on par with, like, Daredevil being the best of the series in general.
Yeah.
But season-wise, I would put that maybe higher than Season 2, but on par with Season 2 at minimum.
Yeah. So, Marvel and Netflix has had similar statements, have said things along the lines of, more adventures with Daredevil will happen, despite the cancellation. So, nobody is saying these shows are going to end up on the Marvel streaming service, and they might not end up in the same way that they are now at Netflix, but I have a feeling like we're going to get those actors playing those characters elsewhere.
I mean, it could be some form of, like, maybe instead of having each series be across the same universe but different series, maybe they just have it all. Like, maybe they do the Defenders, but it's one show that they release 4 times a year, 4 seasons with each of the characters, instead of it being the one title character. You get what I'm saying. Kind of like how Voltron had 4 seasons this year.
Yeah.
It's like that. The Defenders will have 4 seasons. Each season will be primarily focused on one character, but because it's a Defender series, it's more likely to have crossover episodes and stuff.
Yeah,
which not impossible.
Yeah, and it's one of those... the one thing that Marvel kind of has in its corner at this point is... well, not even in its corner, that was the wrong way to put that. Marvel keeps their stuff pretty cohesive as far as characters go. Whereas, like, DC, nothing fucking sticks.
Yeah.
It's unlikely, unless the actors just don't ever want to do it again, that they would recast those roles. So, like, yeah. You're probably going to see Charlie Cox as Daredevil, you'll see Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, like, that just makes sense. Like, if they're going to bring these characters back in any way, that's how you're going to see them.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe even though they're saying they're canceled, they're quote canceled because of the Snapchat. And once Avengers 4 comes out,
they're definitely off of Netflix.
Take away the snap, come back. No.
I think it's kind of twofold. Netflix does not want to put the money out that Disney would want to retain those rights. And Netflix seems to be more in the idea of actually making their own content rather than licensing other content.
Yeah.
At least for their live action. For animated stuff, it's a little different because you're always going to make more money off of some sort of existing character than to try and launch your own animated series.
Yeah.
So, Did you guys happen to see the new Captain Marvel trailer?
I did not see it.
She spoke in this one, guys.
Sort of. She said some words.
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't, like, sat down to watch it. I had a lot of time last week to actually watch my shows from last week, so that's what I did last night. So I didn't watch it yet, but I want to.
It was honestly a decent trailer. At this point, I don't need to see any more trailers.
Yeah.
I have enough now to know that this movie looks like it's going to be good.
Yeah. I do know, or I believe the rumor is that Avengers is dropping on Wednesday.
Yeah, so there is supposed to be an Avengers trailer this week, which means we'll probably get the title.
Yeah.
This is kind of skipping around a little bit, but the Russo brothers are going to be at the Game Awards on Thursday.
Okay.
They're fans of Fortnite, apparently.
Of course. They are.
Why would they be such great directors and have bad taste in video games?
But yeah, so they're going to be at the Game Awards, probably just presenting like an award for something.
Yeah.
But how fucking cool would it be if they fucking world premiered the Avengers trailer at the Game Awards?
I mean, that'd be pretty sweet, but like I said, though, I think I heard rumor is that it's tomorrow. That's Wednesday, yeah, I mean, not Thursday.
Honestly, I don't think Jeff Keighley has deep enough pockets to fucking pull that out.
More likely, we'll finally see that Square Enix Marvel game.
Actually, yeah, I always forget that thing even exists. That would actually be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, I guess just moving over to that, Game Awards are this week, guys, Thursday. Apparently, there are going to be at least 10 new game announcements.
New game announcements
is
how they worded it?
Not including trailers and stuff for existing things that we're already aware of.
Okay.
So that means that, like, you know, we could get one of those 10 things could be a new title from Nintendo. But Nintendo could also show us something like Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah. So there was a leak, potentially, anyway, of something that may be announced on Thursday, which is a Metroid Prime trilogy release for Switch.
That would be cool.
I wouldn't be upset about that.
A Swedish retailer leaked that, I think.
Fucking Swedish retailers.
Could also be fake. Don't know.
Yeah.
But I did see that headline going around.
But yeah, have you guys watched the Game of Year Awards when they've been on?
I've never watched them.
Why not?
Because they're on Thursday nights at like 10 o'clock.
it's 9 o'clock.
I've never thought about watching.
2 years ago, they had a man in the fucking chic razor suit dancing in the crowd all night. It was great.
Right.
Last year, they had that guy that made a way out up on stage saying, fuck the Oscars. That show is a show to watch.
I mean, maybe.
I try to catch some of it, but it does start relatively late.
Like, last year, I watched it the next day because it's just on Twitch.
Yeah.
And actually, it doesn't drag that much because they have a finite amount of time. Like, they do keep things moving fairly well. There are a good number of ad breaks, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's on Twitch and YouTube. It's on a lot of places, but it's very quickly archived on Twitch and YouTube, so it's easy to just go back and watch it after the fact.
Yeah, we'll probably link it onto our Facebook or something.
It is usually a fun show. Jeff Keighley does a good job putting that thing together.
That's true.
Yeah. Other than that, though, on Saturday, because that's Thursday, so on Saturday, Kinda Funny is doing a game showcase.
Okay.
So Sony doesn't do their PSX this year, which is usually kicks off the day after the Game Awards.
Yeah.
So Kinda Funny decided to do their own showcase, where they apparently have over 60 fucking games that are going to be shown on their little thing. From, like, everywhere from, like, small indie developers all the way up to AAA publishers.
Interesting.
And apparently half a dozen games are going to release during it.
Interesting.
Yeah, they, and it's weird just because, like, I follow their content, so I've known about this for a while, but then shit like Variety is reporting it, and Game Informer. Like, Game Informer and Variety both have articles on their website about this showcase, and it's kind of fucking weird.
That's pretty sweet, though.
Yeah. And I know like, Sega is one of the companies that's going to have stuff. Humble Bundle is doing something with them.
I want to say I saw that Greg Miller tweeted that there are two new Vita games or something like that.
I feel like he's just making shit up now.
Maybe.
But at the same time, it could be like a weird little indie developer.
I mean, they're probably both indie games.
Yeah, because I mean,
but
Greg loves his Vita.
He does.
Like, that's his pride and joy, I think. More so than his wiener dog. Obsidian.
Uh-huh.
They make games.
Yeah.
They are now owned by Microsoft. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Apparently, at the Game Awards, they may be announcing a game.
Uh-huh.
It may not be a Microsoft exclusive, though, because it's probably something pre-ownership. Because they were, for a while, working with Take-Two in their private division publishing group.
Okay.
Like, literally, I'm fairly certain, if I remember correctly, Private Division is literally the name
of the,
of the group, not, like, a private division. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they announce something that's, like, a Microsoft game, or if this is, like, the last thing they were working on before acquisition. But I like Obsidian. They've made some pretty good games in the past. Rich, this one's a little bit more for you. Pokemon Go PvP Trainer Battles are happening.
Yeah, they have been promoing it for a few days. I just got an update for Pokemon Go just now, but I don't really know if it has launched yet or not. But it seems interesting to say the least right now. The best way to put it is it's currently 3-on-3 battles, not 6-on-6. And you can do, it's PvP, and it is essentially just the gym battle system, the current gym battle system. But from what I'm seeing is your Pokemon has 2 charge abilities, not 1, and you can pick which charge ability to use, but one takes longer to charge than the other. So you keep tapping just like before, and then you pick your charge ability. And once you pick it, you then tap that as much as you can to charge that up as it attacks. While you're charging it up, your opponent can choose to use, I don't know how many, like I've only seen a few videos here and there.
So I have a bunch of the notes here, because GameSpot got to actually go play it.
Fine. You talk about my favorite thing ever, then.
No, I was just going to tell you what the thing was. The protect, there's a different amount based on the battle, it seems.
Yeah.
But it's a finite amount, so they can only protect themselves so many times.
Yeah, and it's protect during a battle. It's protect themselves and not each Pokemon that many times. It's so they get like 3 uses of it or whatever. So I mean, it's better than just sitting there tapping. You actually have to think about what you're doing.
There's also a time limit, 240 seconds.
Yeah, which is not a surprise. There are 3 separate leagues currently for your battling. The lesser, it's, each league has a different, CP cap. So, for instance, Cobb, say your Pokemon are only at 1,000 CP is your highest. We can, or, let's see, the Great League is 1,500, the Ultra League is 2,500, and the Master League is, like, no limit.
Yeah.
So if your strongest Pokemon are around 1,500, but my strongest are 2,500, we can go into a Great League battle. This way you kind of have more of a fair fight than when battling me, which is it's sweet. I like that they did that. I kind of wish they would cut your high-level Pokemon down to 1,500, though. I don't think it does that.
Probably not.
Apparently there's going to be a way to train your team to make them stronger. Back when they had the old gym system, when you would train in the gym, your Pokemon IVs would increase. But ever since they took that away, your Pokemon IVs are what they are. So this might be a way to do that. I don't really know how reputable this Polygon article is that was posted.
It's Polygon, so not at all.
I believe it was posted about 3 hours ago. I don't know if this is like what you do in the battles or like what they want more of. But it seems like I'm excited for it. I can't wait to try it. I don't know how to get into it, so I don't know if I have it yet. I don't know if like they're rolling it out slowly, but I have seen people play videos and stream them battling people.
Yeah, because some outlets got to test it out early.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that legendaries are going to be allowed. Ditto and Sheninja are not.
Which makes sense.
I don't know why Sheninja isn't, though.
I mean, Sheninja is a newer Pokemon into the game. I don't know what its abilities are, so like, I don't know like what its specialties are from Pokemon. I mean, they also don't have Smargle in the game, Smeagol, whatever it is.
Oh, at all?
The painting dog yet? No, not at all.
Wasn't that Gen 3?
It was Gen 2, I think.
So it's gotta be part of the Pokedex, it just hasn't...
It's part of the Pokedex, but it's just a number right now, because no one's ever seen it before.
I wonder if it's another one of those, like, location, like...
No.
No?
No. Because I would have seen it, because there's people that spoof, and I've seen every Pokemon, even region specifics.
So the weird thing with Sheninja is, I don't know if what its deal is in Pokemon Go. It's basically just the carcass of a Pokemon that shed its skin.
Yeah.
Because it's a bug ghost, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, if in order to get it in, I believe it was a Gen 4 Pokemon.
Gen 3.
Gen 3 Pokemon. In order to get it, you had to have an open spot in your lineup and evolve a Pokemon to the next, to the third, from second to third.
Yeah.
And it would, you would just automatically have this Pokemon in your team after that.
Yeah, I think later generations, you also had to have a Pokeball. Otherwise, yeah, it had nothing to go into.
Which makes sense, but, in Pokemon Go, it was a weekly research task for last month.
Oh.
For all of October. Or October and November? I can't fully remember. Minimum through November. I know it was through November, maybe some of October.
I think October was Suicune, because Erica was still playing at that point.
Right, yeah, it was. So then, yeah, it was all of November.
I'm wondering if the reason it's not eligible is, like, so in the game, like, it has incredibly low health, in regular Pokemon, I should say. It has incredibly low health. But that's because only super effective attacks can even do any damage to it.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yep. So I wonder if that's similar to what it has in Pokemon Go. That's why.
I could be. I have two of them because I didn't really play a lot last month. So instead of having three or four, I mean, it's only two less than the maximum I could have gotten. But I only have two of them. I'm probably never going to use them. Because I'm rather going to use the Pokemon I like than the Pokemon that are strongest, and I don't really care about this thing. So I don't know why they can't be used, but Ditto makes sense because you can use Ditto in gym battles, and it just changes to the current Pokemon that's in there.
Yeah, apparently that's not the case for PvP battles, at least for the time being.
Yeah, I'm sure they could update it. I don't know what notes you have from your article.
Basically just what you had said, 3v3, not 6v6. The whole protect thing is available. It's still just tapping the screen to attack, to build up your special moves.
Yeah.
The time limit, the three leagues, no Ditto or Sheninja, so.
I think I read something about possible NPCs that you can battle to train up. But again, that was from the Polygon article I was just looking at just now. I haven't read too much more on this. It's just from what I've seen on social media, because I'm on like four Pokemon Go pages.
Yeah. But yeah, so that is happening sooner rather than later, it seems.
By the end of this month. I wouldn't be surprised if we have it before Christmas.
It's possible.
Yeah.
And the last thing I have, Rockstar has officially confirmed it is not working on a Superman game.
Cool.
Or Rocksteady.
Yeah, I just said Rockstar, didn't I?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, Rocksteady is not working on a Superman game. Neither is Rockstar. They are working on Red Dead. That'll probably be the game they work on for the next several years.
Yeah. But Rocksteady, no Superman.
Yeah, Sefton Hill, the director for the game that they're working on over at Rocksteady, tweeted out, "Looking forward to the Game Awards this year. We're still hard at work in our development bunker, so don't expect an announcement from Rocksteady Games. When it's ready to show, you'll be the first to know. Spoiler, it's not Superman." And then
it's Bizarro Superman.
That would actually be really funny. But Jason Schreier, who is basically the guy that finds out all of the information about video games.
Yeah.
He has said previously that it's going to be some sort of like superhero group game. So maybe like a Justice League or a Legion of Superheroes or a Titans.
Okay.
And it's potentially going to be like a game as a service.
What do you mean?
Destiny.
Yeah. I was trying to think of another, okay. Like, yeah, any of those, like, you can play the base game, but they're going to have ongoing content to keep you buying more pieces of it and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so not exactly what you want from Rocksteady, but will probably still be a solid game.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is all the news.
That's some news.
Yeah, there wasn't much, but we had a lot of PAX Unplugged to go over.
Yeah.
We are at 2 hours and 15 minutes, so we talked about PAX for quite a while.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
No.
Nope.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, then that was a show. Thank you for listening. You can find more of our stuff over at www.one-quest.com. You can ever head over to patreon.com/onequest to support us. We are on Stitcher, iTunes, Facebook. We are on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, or Google Play Podcasts, and all those other fancy places if you want to find all of our content.
It's just Google Podcasts.
Oh, is that all it's called?
It's just Google Podcasts.
It's stupid to begin with. I don't know why they changed it.
Because I think they're trying to get rid of Google Play now that they have YouTube Music going on.
Probably. I hope not. But
I don't know.
We're on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline, @one_quest on Twitter and Instagram. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always shoot us an email over at social@one-quest.com.
Yeah.
And yeah, that will do it for this week. We will be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.